South Park bigger, longer, and uncut. Kyle's mom, Sheila, makes Canada the scapegoat for the bad behavior of South Park's children. But if Kyle's mom were to find a scapegoat today, it would likely be artificial intelligence rather than America's friendly neighbor to the north. It's hard to go a single day without hearing about how AI will ruin, automate everything, including contact center jobs. One Canadian who's not scapegoating the role of AI in the contact center is Mike Aoki, a survivor of the American-Canadian War. Just kidding. He's spent decades in the business and is optimistic about how contact centers will adapt and evolve as more AI is introduced. This week on Next in Queue, Mike and I discuss opportunities for generative AI in the contact center, how the role of contact center agents will evolve, impacts of the evolution of the agent role, the future of knowledge bases and other agent tools, how remote work impacts contact centers, one area where AI will actually drive up cost, and resources to keep up on the latest best practices in the industry. Let's get to it.
Welcome to Next in Queue, the podcast for contact center and customer experience professionals. Next in Queue is brought to you by Happy 2 Vision. Eliminate blind spots and see right through every conversation with Happy 2 Vision. Learn more at hapitu.com. Now, here's your host, Rob Dwyer.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for joining another episode of Next in Queue. Today, I am honored to be joined by Mike Aoki. Mike, how are you?
Good, Rob. Very well, thanks. How are you doing?
I am doing great. You are joining from, as I like to say, across the falls. I mean, technically it's across a border, but you're up in the Toronto area, correct?
I am indeed, yes. Great, right up here. And thankfully, it's a nice sunny day today, which is really great after a long winter that we had up here in Canada.
That's good. For anyone that's familiar with Buffalo weather, that's basically Toronto weather, right?
Pretty close. Not quite as much snow, but pretty close, yes.
Yeah. Well, you're on the north side of Lake Ontario. Right. That helps. That helps a lot. So you've spent not only the last 20 plus years really kind of consulting for contact centers, but before that, you were very much involved in contact centers. Really, it seems like your entire life. And I don't know if you know this, but ChatGPT is ending contact centers, right? I mean, you're we'll out of a job, I'm out of a job, that's happening. Am I understanding that correctly?
Well, you know what, Rob? It's funny. I think every new technology brings with it opportunities and challenges. I think the opportunity here is to be able to help a lot of people in terms of self-serve, in terms of also being a ChatGPT being a really great tool, not just for customers, but also for the agents themselves. To be able to go and search their databases, find knowledge faster, be able to do great first drafts and finish products to some customers as well. But I think it's a really great tool, but it won't necessarily replace live human interaction. It just means that the human interaction will change.
Yeah.
And you've already seen this before with just basic chatbots, a lot of the sort of routine interactions, like how late is your store open? What's your mailing address? Things like that can be done by automated services. But the more complicated things though, the things where people are really upset and want to have empathy, where they've got a complex problem and need additional help, that'll still be there. But I do think it'll be a migration of skills that, frontline agents that are in a tier one situation will have to be able to help learn additional skills and become that kind of sort of, tier one / kind of tier two, situation where they can handle more complex issues. But it's also a great opportunity for people to go and learn new skills and to have more challenging, more interesting interactions and not just the rote kind of, we're open till nine, but having more interactive and more interesting things to go and do, as you advance.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of the talk about the IVR when the IVR was introduced. And, you know, people claimed then that the contact center agent job was going to be obsolete and everything would be handled by the IVR. But I don't know a single person who, when upset, has called and talked to an IVR and felt better about everything at the end of that. Mm-hmm. I just don't know that that's ever happened.
Well, exactly. That's just it. And, you know, part of it too is, you know, if you look in terms of customer experience, it's about providing that really great experience and doing it in the way that the customer wants. And again, some customers will want to go and deal with the chatbot just to get basic answers. But you're right. When people are upset, you know, they want to talk to somebody who's human. Mm-hmm. And they also sometimes too don't trust, you know, what the answers are coming back from a chatbot, and they want to verify with a human. Or as we've found as well, they'll verify with an agent and then want to talk to a manager to verify it again. So right. Just challenges that are out there. I think the biggest thing though with ChatGPT is it will allow though customers to have a better customer experience in the sense of web self-service, more information, getting routine transactions processed without having to wait online, mm-hmm. you know, because ChatGPT is so scalable. Yeah. And the other thing too that might be a surprise to all contact center leaders is it may also increase your overall contact volume, but because it's scalable, it won't necessarily increase your costs.
You know, that are there. Interesting.
So just a couple of other thoughts there as well.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the agents and let's talk about how we change what we're doing in the contact center to prepare agents for this new world in which they're asked to not do the more mundane things, because mm-hmm. we've been working on deflection measures, and I hate that word deflection, but the reality is we've been working on creating all kinds of self-service options that customers do adopt, and they find ways to get their answers quickly. And then there are the things that they want to talk to people about. So what are some of the things that contact centers should be thinking about and doing differently when it comes to training their agents to prepare them for that?
You know, I think one of the biggest things is, as you mentioned, the training piece, also the mindset piece as well, though, which is helping to shift that mindset from being those mundane routine tasks to now, you know, letting not just the agents, but also, you know, the team leaders, managers, quality assurance, et cetera, know the fact that, you know, the contact center, you know, will be migrating towards handling more complicated issues, more emotional issues that are out there. And that as part of that mindset shift, you know, going away from the very rigid kind of mindset, the very almost industrial mindset, to being a mindset that's really more focused on the human factor. And being more focused on empathy. And bear in mind, too, you mentioned self-service, you know, by the time that an agent actually speaks with a customer, that customer may have gone through two or three different automated channels and become increasingly frustrated with the website, the chatbot, the shopping cart, et cetera. In the customer's mind, it's their fourth contact now. And they've been on doing at this now for half an hour, an hour. They're at the end of their rope. To the agent, though, it's a brand new call dropping in. Okay, yeah. So just change that mindset to look at the fact that this will be more challenging, but also give you opportunities for folks that get bored with the mundane, for folks that, you know, want to learn new skills and also advance their skills. And the good news is, you know, as the agents upskill like this, as they become more of that tier 1/tier 2, they develop better diagnostic skills, better problem solving skills, better communication skills. And that's going to help them all throughout their career. You know, whether they become a team lead, manager, if they go to marketing, sales, you know, engineering, whatever else in the company, those skills will carry with you because they're good communication skills.
Yeah.
And that's part of the biggest messages.
We don't talk enough about the skills that you learn as a contact center agent, which are huge. They're transferable. They will serve you well in a lot of different ways. I do wonder, are we thinking enough about kind of the stress and the burnout potential that comes with agents who are now handling more and more complex issues and potentially more emotionally charged conversations versus some of those more mundane things, which may not be terribly engaging or exciting, but at least aren't emotionally taxing?
Well, it is a huge issue as well, because again, you're asking more in terms of skill, but you're also asking more in terms of, as you said, the emotional issues, potential emotional burnout issues that are there. And the fact that if you go from a mix of, say, you know, 90% mundane and then 10% sort of more extreme to being 90% more extreme, okay, it will, you know, tend to go and take an emotional and physical toll, you know, on individuals. And I think that's where things have to be looked at in terms of support services. So additional training on emotional intelligence, but also emotional self-management, and emotional care. And when I say that, by the way, I want to emphasize the fact that although it's important for each individual to be able to help receive that kind of training and support, it's also not fair to go and put all the burden of being able to avoid burnout on each individual employee. The overall contact center, the overall company also has to go and take responsibility for how do they want to go and change metrics? How do they want to potentially, you know, look at how they want to restructure, how they shift people around within the contact center? You know, I mean, do you have folks online on the phones for, say, a 3-month stint and then give them a month or two or three offline to go and do, say, other kinds of customer service, email, things like that, that tend to give you a little more time to reflect before you have to respond. And I know it's going to be probably, you know, increase the complexity of workforce management and how the metrics are done. But I think you're right. Thought has to be put into the idea about the emotional burnout piece. You can't have somebody, you know, being hammered 80 times a day, you know, with really emotionally tough, really complex issues on an ongoing basis for year after year and think they'll be as effective and fresh after a year or two or three or 4 years as they were at the very start, you know. And at the same point in time, you don't want to burn out and lose those folks.
Yeah.
Because the other thing that we have to take a look at is now, how are you hiring? And what skills are you hiring for? And it's not just now to go and find somebody who can talk on the phone, type fast, and look up information and give kind of quick rips or rote mundane answers. Now you're looking for more complex emotional intelligence, emotional maturity, emotional self-management. And so the skill set and the hiring of that has to go increase as well, which also means they're more valuable.
Yeah.
So compensation changes there because it's harder to find those good people. There's retention changes, okay, that are there because you need to keep those good people because they're hard to replace. Okay. There's also value there. And I really get back to, you know, I think you've seen it, I've seen it in your social media posts, I've had as well, about just how important, you know, it is to really honor and respect the frontline people that are there. And I've been there. I've been yelled at, sworn at, and everything else as a former frontline agent you have as well. So, you know, we know how tough it is. And how important it is that, you know, that people get that support, you know, that's there. Anyway, I kind of went on a little bit of a diatribe. Sorry, Rob, on that.
But, no, yeah. I love it. You know, as you were talking, I'm thinking about some of the things that you're bringing up are already concerns for contact center leaders, for workforce, for recruiters, wherever you fall in the contact center. We're talking about compensation, we're talking about retention, and working about finding the right people to bring in these skills. And I think there are a lot of contact centers that are already struggling with some of those things. How do you think we approach things differently when those pressures are only getting stronger?
Well, I think part of it too, you know, it's really from that leadership perspective, thinking about, you know, what is your contact center really meant for? You know, is it meant to go and help give the best customer experience possible? And is it, you know, really set up in that sense? You know, and again, it's really going back into the idea about, you know, how do you want to structure things? Do you want to do certain, you know, again, different queue rotations, skill set rotations, how are you hiring, et cetera? I think part of it is just, you know, taking that step back and kind of reinventing the contact center. You know, in the age of ChatGPT and in the age of remote work as well, which has also had a big impact that still hasn't felt its all the way through the system yet either, you know, to be able to help support those things. I do know that the old industrial way of looking at things, you know, mass hiring, mass recruit, you know, mass training, get them online, answer, you know, where 90% of the calls are mundane, kind of just quick answer type calls, that part's going away for a lot of industries. And so it's really important to kind of get ahead of that change and not try to use that same, you know, perspective anymore in terms of doing that.
Yeah. One of the things that you mentioned earlier that I'd like to explore a little bit are kind of the metrics that we use to gauge success in a contact center. And I think every contact center is familiar with average handle time. And most contact centers focus on keeping average handle time within a narrow range. And yet we're also now talking about taking the mundane, the easy, and turning that into self-serve options and mm-hmm. increasing complexity when it comes to the agents. Mm-hmm. Are contact centers looking at average handle time as maybe volume decreases and making an adjustment? Or is that something that we still need to figure out?
I think, Rob, just the concept about how people look at average handle time is really important. And you brought up a very key point, which is that, you know, with ChatGPT, other automated AIs, you know, the actual volume that comes into a live to the live agent queues may be lower, but the average handle time may go up quite a bit because mm-hmm. of more complex issues. And so you may have the same, you know, 8 hour per day or, you know, whatever it is for a person. But again, you know, the actual length of the calls may increase, but the actual call volume may decrease. But, you know, still the whole idea is really being able to go and you know, keep an eye on that. You know, from a schedule, from a workforce management standpoint, keep an eye on that actual volume and the average length, average handle time, and then just see what happens with that. Okay. And if it does tend to increase as an average across the department, whatever you do, don't rush to suddenly jump all over the average handle time. Okay. Again, you can manage outliers that are there, but just, you know, watch how the trending goes, because, you know, if the average handle time is actually increasing, and, you know, part of it is due to the complexity of the calls themselves, then you want to adjust those targets. Okay. Mm-hmm. You don't want to strictly, you know, hold to a line of, oh, we got to be within 180 seconds, you know, of doing that. Because as we all know, if you set an arbitrary average handle time, agents will find ways to, you know, to actually hit that time. Rushing customers offline, incomplete answers, driving repeat calls back, you know, increasing customer dissatisfaction, you know, in terms of doing that. So I think a lot of it is just to be aware of and to keep your finger on the pulse of what's happening and see what the impact is, you know, as you introduce these kinds of systems. But just having that flexibility and that open-mindedness is really crucial.
Yeah, you bring up a really important thing when it comes to average handle time. And that is, if we're not focusing on the behaviors, the root cause of what's driving that average handle time, which could be a skill issue, it could be a change in what people are calling about, something where we need to come back and train our people on, right? There are just a million different reasons, but if you just focus on the number, mm-hmm. agents are smart. They'll find ways to hit the number in ways mm-hmm. that you didn't intend. So mm-hmm. don't focus too closely on the number. Understand what's driving that so that you can put your efforts towards that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. That just didn't bear in mind that AHT is an efficiency metric. It's all about the efficiency overall for the department, but it's not necessarily an effectiveness measurement. In fact, it's not at all really an effectiveness measurement in terms of how the customer feels. Okay, yeah. NPS, CSAT, that'll tell you a lot more about how the customer reacts to things, you know, in terms of doing that. So just not having that myopic focus on AHT, but as you said, think about what's driving the numbers. And I think more importantly, how it's trending. Mm. You know, I think it'll be a big thing in the next year or two.
Yeah. Okay, so we need to settle something while we're here. Let's talk about the word center. Is it C-E-N-T-E-R or C-E-N-T-R-E? Because I saw both on your profile, and mm-hmm. I think we need to settle this.
Okay. All right. So classic American spelling, of course, the E-R at the end of center. British spelling or Canadian spelling, English spelling would be typically the R-E. Okay. So being up here in Toronto, I'll tend to go and use a lot of R-E, but when I write for American audiences, I'll use the American spellings.
I see. Yeah. So you kind of use both.
I do.
Is that really common in Canada to use the British spelling?
It is actually. So typically what you find is that, and what we're supposed to be doing if we write, you know, inside of Canada, is to use the British spelling. So the R-E, I know we stick an extra U in words like honor, for instance, you know, so it's O-U-R, et cetera. So that's actually is supposed to what's happened in terms of Canadian English. Now, I'll have to admit, though, a lot of people do use the American spellings. And bear in mind, 90% of Canada's population is actually within about a 200-mile distance from the U.S. border, okay? So if you look at your northern border within the U.S., like Minnesota, you know, New York State, et cetera, we're literally just most 90% of the population of Canada is about 200 miles within that, just to the north of that. So we get impacted by a lot of American publications, TV, et cetera. So you will see a lot of the American spellings as well. But we're supposed to be officially using the R-E and the British spelling here.
It's funny that Canada holds on to the spelling and to holidays, but true. In the U.S. we've held on to the way we measure things. Like mm-hmm. you guys went all metric system.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, in 1975, Canada went metric, but still people commonly use, like, they tell their weight in pounds, you know, they give estimates of things in terms of feet, you know, yards, miles, etc. So it's still used up here sort of informally, but yeah, officially it's supposed to be metric on all the packages and everything else. But it's even in America, though, sometimes I do see some metric.
Because you're really close to us, you want to be more like Americans in some ways, and we should strive to be more like Canadians in other ways, I think.
Well, it's one continent. It's also funny, too. I grew up actually just north of Windsor, which is just across the border from Detroit. So I grew up watching Detroit radio, TV shows, radio, listening to radio stations, etc. So it's kind of funny like that, too. But yeah, it's just interesting in terms of just the idea about being able to, you know, again, look at what's common about both countries' contact centers and environment. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just really amazing about how, I don't know how to describe this, but just how important it is to be able to offer really great customer service and to help keep that customer base, you know, happy. And also how challenging it is as well, you know, for both countries.
Yeah, it is absolutely a challenge. So, real topics. Let's talk about some of these emerging technologies and how they really will fit into the agent's life. So we've talked a little bit about how these things will make customer experience different. They'll make agent experience different. And I am no technology expert. I don't think you purport to be a technology expert. No, not at all. The same time, right, we're thinking about how these different things are going to fit into how we grow agent skill sets, how we get them started. So what kinds of use cases have you seen or thought about that you're like, yes, I am totally on board with that and I can't wait to see it?
In terms of technology, I think, you know, one of the biggest changes I've seen is just the idea about moving away from a very text-heavy knowledge base. I mean, a lot of knowledge bases right now are almost like Wikipedia. You know, you type in search engine, certain search words, and it comes back with big blocks of text that's there. And of course, the challenge I've seen with agents, you know, is the fact that they don't want to read a 5-page article just to go and pull out one answer for a customer, and the customer doesn't want to wait for that. And I know for myself as a customer, when I call places, you know, when an agent says, you know, do you mind waiting on hold for a minute or two while I look through the, you know, the answer, or I can tell they're reading something and probably scrolling like mad through a screen right now and not talking to me. I understand because I'm in the business, but I think for a lot of customers, it's frustrating. For a lot of agents, it's frustrating. And so I think one of the best things I'm seeing now are a lot more, you know, knowledge bases that actually are visually arranged, that use a lot of flow charting, that tend to have much stronger search engine algorithms, including things like incorporating ChatGPT or Google Bard into them to be able to go and pull up fast searches so that the agents actually get the information they need, just the one paragraph out of that 5-page article to be able to answer that customer's question. So that's one of the biggest, nicest things I've seen is much better, faster knowledge bases. And that really seems to help out an awful lot.
Yeah, it's definitely something as an agent. When I think about when I got started as an agent, we didn't have a lot of knowledge-based tools at our disposal, and the training would last a really long time because you had to ingest so much information and understand how to do all of these things. And then when you didn't know how to do something, that was a situation where it was like, okay, well, I need to raise my hand, or I need to reach out and get help from a supervisor or an escalations team to figure out how to do something. And then we moved into this knowledge base world where everything was contained within a knowledge base, which, to your point, super text heavy. And now we're seeing the evolution of that enter into the contact center, where those knowledge bases now are far more contextual and are providing information on the fly.
Right. It's really good as well, too. Some of the work, again, if you look at, say, ChatGPT, you know, it can also provide the right answer and even give a cut and paste phrase you can use to simply cut that into the email, into that chat, you know, as well. So, again, just ways to go and help, you know, make the job easier for agents, save time, and provide more accurate information. Mm-hmm. And that's really good in terms of being able to go and help people. And I think, you know, even when it comes to, you know, mentioned the idea about, you know, raising your hand, for instance, back when it was on site, you know, again, for remote agents, it's even tougher now. You know, they're in their living room, they're in their bedroom. And although they can use, like, you know, ping somebody on Teams, you know, go to an escalation queue, etc., you know, again, it's more isolating now. And that's why I think it's more important to have the support tools available to really help people, you know, an awful lot. And just to, you know, make the agents feel as supported as possible, as opposed to being basically you're done training, you're in your living room, you're on your own now, you know, and we'll just watch all your stats and you know, ping you when your calls go too long. It's just, it's not the way to do things.
Yeah, I do think that particularly contact centers that were forced into it and maybe haven't decided, are we all in and work at home? Are we doing kind of a hybrid thing? That transition to being an agent who works exclusively at home or mostly at home, I think we forget that not having a neighbor that you can talk to in between calls, that you can just lean over and say, hey, I've got a quick question,
right,
or, you know, spin around to the person who sits behind you. That's a big disadvantage, and we need to have systems that help support agents in the ways, it'll look different, but in the ways that those neighbors supported them in a physical contact center.
Yeah, and I agree with you that, you as well, you know, in terms of doing that. I mean, you know, some places I've seen will do things like they'll have dedicated chat, like say Teams chat channel to certain topics. There's a chat one in say tech, one on billing, et cetera, and then have the escalations queue actually monitor that channel, as well as other agents that might be between calls or you know, after call work or whatever, you know, take a look in terms of that as well, you know, to be able to help, you know, help with that. I think part of it too that I've seen in training that seems to work really well is for remote agents is just to assign study buddies and just say, okay, we've got 15 people here, all the boxes you see here on screen, all the faces you see here on screen, but just, you know, be able to go and assign study buddies, get them so they can actually kind of work together a little bit, build some relationships, some sense of teamwork that's there. And I know for myself, you probably found this as well, the people that were in your new hire class when you were an agent, you tend to go and get to know over those, whatever, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, and stay in touch with throughout your contact center, sort of, you know, life in the contact center. So it's just about building those relationships, but it has to be deliberate now.
Mm-hmm.
The inadvertent contact in the lunchroom, you know, waiting for the elevator, it doesn't happen anymore when it's remote. So now trainers and team leaders have to consciously build those kinds of connections and make those opportunities possible. So I agree with you. There's a lot of, I think, you know, work that has to be done to be able to help, you know, make remote work be as connected, you know, as it was back in the office.
Yeah. You know, you just brought up something that I think maybe we don't talk enough about. And that is, not only has the role of an agent changed, and it has in a lot of ways, including possibly working from home. But if those agents are working from home, then the role of that frontline team leader, supervisor, that changes too, because I'm the person that's responsible for enabling those relationships to be developed and right, to foster a relationship. Are you seeing a different skill set be required to be in that role?
You know, I really do. And I really felt that, especially in the last 6 months or 2 years, is, you know, seeing that, especially with newly hired or newly promoted team leaders, is that, you know, in terms of what's written down for their role, in many cases, it's still that traditional sort of in the office team leader role. So listening to calls, coaching, giving feedback, running in-person team huddles or team meetings, you know, being able to go and handle escalations. And, you know, I think if you look in terms of, you know, what a team leader for remote team has to go and take a look at as well, is how do you do all of that remotely, you know, and how do you enable? So for team, you know, so for team meeting, how do you make that interactive when you're doing this via Teams, you know, or via Google Meet or Zoom? You know, how do you incorporate things like polls, you know, whiteboard discussions, things like that, breakout sessions, things like that? As trainers, we know how to do it, or I've learned how to go and do that. But as team leaders, though, unless they're being trained how to run a virtual team meeting, how to build connections virtually, it's tough. And they're already struggling as it is as a newly hired or promoted team leader just to go and do the other brand new parts, right, like quality monitoring and coaching back and handling escalations now as a team leader, not to mention the other pieces, you know, of doing that. So I think it's one big thing there is, how do you manage a remote team? And how to communicate effectively using all your tools that are out there. The other part of it too, though, I think from a mindset issue, is that the actual, you know, sort of goal in terms of what you want to do changes a bit as well. Because for an in-office team leader, it's what I mentioned about, again, quality assurance and coaching and escalations. But for a remote team leader, it changes quite a bit now to being, you're actually the lifeline of each individual agent. Because think about it this way, as an agent, you're probably spending 80 or 90% of your time talking to external people, to customers that are out there, okay? And in terms of internal contact, you're probably talking mostly to your team leader, maybe as well to workforce, possibly to HR about a payroll issue or whatever, possibly IT for your laptop, but mostly to your team leader. And that team leader then becomes your lifeline to the overall company. And there's an old adage, of course, people quit bosses, they don't quit companies. And so now there's a big vulnerability, is that brand new team leader who's not been trained on how to manage remotely, okay, even aware of the fact that they're their lifeline, the critical thing that's going to make or break whether you're going to retain people in the contact center or not. So I agree with you. There's going to be a big upskilling, and it's already started to happen as far as being that remote team leader and taking on those additional responsibilities that are out there.
Yeah, it seems like that role was always one of the most critical pieces of a contact center. And it's only become more critical simply because, to your point, they're the main artery through which employees experience a company. Mm-hmm. And there is less of that camaraderie. Like back in the day when you came into the contact center, maybe you didn't love your team leader, but you loved the people that you worked with and you loved your team and you were around them. And maybe that made your day more enjoyable and kept you engaged. And that's a different dynamic if you're working at home, because you don't necessarily have that unless we're fostering some way to emulate that in a work at home environment.
Well, you know, Rob, that's one of the biggest things too. You mentioned the part about, you know, having those coworkers you can talk to as well. And of course, if you look in terms of employee retention, I mean, one of the biggest things again is, you know, about your immediate boss, right? In terms of how they are. But it's also another great question is, do you have a close friend at work?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what in terms of doing that. And of course, back in the office days, people typically, you know, would have that, or hopefully would have that. Okay. Remotely, you still can. And it might be from your new hire group if the training was done properly to actually give opportunities to interact one-on-one or breakout sessions, et cetera, you know, in terms of doing that. But it's really important though, because again, working from home can be very isolating, you know, in terms of doing it. So, you know, it's just being able to help foster those connections. I mean, another idea is to go and assign, you know, a new hire with a mentor, you know, and actually connect them with a more veteran agent, you know, not to be a team leader supervised, but just to be somebody they can bounce ideas off of, or they can talk to you for even let's sometimes as little as like 15 minutes a week, you know, as a quick check-in or whatever, but just to go and have that kind of more senior resource and maybe take some of your high performing agents that want to become team leaders and assign just a little bit of them of their time to actually go and just mentor or just help support, you know, one of the new hires that's there. And that's an addition to on-the-job training. But just, again, help build connections. Because if you don't foster connections, you've got people that are isolated. And if they don't feel like they belong, they're more likely to go and leave as well.
Yeah, that's really great advice. And I think, you know, despite the fact that a lot of companies, you know, went work from home 3 years ago, I think there are companies that are still trying to figure that out and how to navigate those waters. And you know, there aren't any, you know, right or wrong answers. There are only ways to improve and get better. And so thinking about different ways that you can continue to foster an environment that people want to be in and will continue to enjoy their work can only help a company grow.
Right. Well, exactly. That's just it. And, you know, I think training is also one of the biggest things as well, because of course, one of the big vulnerabilities for turnover is during new hire training itself. And we've all seen it before where, you know, you wind up, well, classic example, you hire a class of 15. Of course, now with ghosting, maybe 12 to 13 show up, you know, in terms of doing that, maybe less sometimes from what I've heard. And then as you go through, you start to lose people, you know, and typically it'll be in that first week, people come in for the first couple of days and they realize it wasn't for them. Okay, or they're just, or whatever it is, and you lose people. And then as it goes on sometimes, so by the end, you hopefully, you know, maybe keep 10 people out of the 15, 12 out of the 15, you know, it's just a big vulnerability that's there. And so I think for the new hire training piece, it is really important to go and, you know, build in the interactivity and try to go and help make connections between the group, also with you as a trainer, you know, and also too, you know, with the team leaders. And so one piece of advice here is, you know, try to go and bring the team leaders in, you know, for at least some parts of some of the training sessions to get to know their future agents, you know, that are there. So if you know who's going to go and take on, you know, particular agents or take on the whole new hire class, have them be involved at least a bit with, you know, training, give them some exposure, you know, that's there. And the manager should be in as well, you know, a few times as well to go and talk to people and, you know, and help out with things too. It's just really meant to go and give that company piece. The other big advice I give too, when it comes to, again, that new hire class is, please don't start your first day being all paperwork and HR regulations. Okay. And you're laughing at that because you've probably seen it too, right, Rob?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a brutal way to start. You know, I had one of our previous guests, Matt Beckwith, was on, and one of the things that he advocated for, particularly in a brick and mortar environment, which do still exist. I mean, they're still going strong. You like the first day to be a Friday, and that day was come in. Take a tour, get to know where everything is, handle some paperwork, like low pressure. We're not going to learn like how to take calls or systems or anything like that. It was really just to get your bearings so that you knew, you know, where the elevators were, where the bathroom was, where you could go to get lunch, take care of all those things so that Monday, like you could start and know where the training room was and everyone showed up, you know, where they needed to be and on time and not have, you know, deer in the headlights, like confused, like, where do I go kind of thing. And I really thought that was an intriguing idea.
Yeah, I love that, actually. You know, I know Matt, he's very focused on customer experience and employee experience as well. You know, so it's a really good idea. One of the ones that I heard too was, you know, for the trainer to actually call everybody. One-on-one before the new hire training starts or onboarding starts, just to welcome them to the company, you know, and just to go and say, Rob, I'm Mike, I'll be your trainer next week. Just want to go call up and, you know, just have a conversation, make them feel at ease, build some rapport. Hey, when you come in, by the way, when you log in, you know, here's how we use Zoom here's how we use Teams, you know, things like that, just to really help, you know, make the person feel really welcome. And again, I think a big mindset shift as well. We've seen this happen, especially, of course, in terms of how hot the job market was last year and the year before, you know, was just the whole idea about the fact that companies, contact centers, you know, they now have to sell themselves to their new hires in terms of why the new hires should stay. That dynamic about you're lucky to have a job, you know, it kind of went out the window with the power imbalance. Mm-hmm. And now, and in a good way, it's now, you know, hey, welcome aboard, and we want to keep you and we want to sell you on the company and why it's good to have a career here. You know, that whole difference in mindset and the onboarding piece, the training piece, it really is crucial because that's the first impression that new hires get, you know, that's there, you know. And I always say to you know, other trainers, you know, are you being welcoming? Are you building an interactivity? Are you actually selling the company in a positive way? You know, creating that experience, because employee retention starts at day one. It really does now, even before that, I'd say, in terms of the recruitment process.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And employee retention is going to be critical going forward, because I don't think we're going to see that trend change anytime soon. And so, you know, for companies out there that want to spend less when it comes to recruiting and onboarding, we all know how it's almost just like getting a new customer, right? It's really expensive to get a new customer. It's far less expensive to make your existing customers really happy, maybe upsell or cross sell them some other product or service, depending on what business you're in. The same holds true for employees. It's really expensive to get a new employee.
Yes, it is. Well, I'll give you one example, Rob, about this. And again, think about with ChatGPT and other AIs taking away the sort of bottom mundane calls that are in there, and the agents being upskilled in terms of their emotional intelligence and customer service skills and ability to handle complex problems. Is that becomes even tougher to be able to replace now, and even more expensive when you lose that. And, you know, an old rule of thumb for this is it takes, you know, 6 months for a new hire to really get to even basic competence and a year to really get to, or more to get to mastery. And again, if you're bleeding off, like a lot of internal contact centers do, 20, 30% of your agents per year, that's a huge hole to go and fill, you know, when it takes place. So again, it's going to be really critical. And it's funny, you know, I mentioned that 30% turnover rate internally, which is pretty common. And a lot of us go, yeah, that's just how the business is, you know, and doing that. The funny part though, is if you said to a company, you're going to lose 30% of your customers every year, they'd be panicking. Okay. Yeah. They'd be having C-level executive meetings about that. So just kind of funny how that goes. And I love your perspective on that in terms of thinking about them as if they're customers, you want to retain them, you know, in the contact center.
Yeah. Well, Mike, last thoughts. something that we haven't talked about, maybe something that is on your mind right now, burning. What's out there that you want to talk about and share with the audience?
Okay. You know, I think the thing that really comes to mind for me is we've talked a lot about all these decisions and all these changes. And you know, a lot of it, again, falls upon the contact center leaders, right? The VPs or directors. I think one of the biggest things I want to mention there is for them is, number one, be good to yourself, be kind to yourself. If you don't have all the answers, you're just like everyone else that's out there right now. A lot of change in the last 3 years, a lot of change this year alone. Okay. So number one is that is give yourself a break, you know, and then I think number two about that is, you know, just, you know, do your research, you know, reach out to people. I'm a big believer, by the way, in terms of, you know, LinkedIn itself and other, you know, online organizations that are out there, because they're really great sources of information. And, you know, I'm also a big believer too, in terms of different contact center associations. So, you know, ICMI, for instance, you know, that's out there, CCW in Canada, GTAC, which is a Greater Toronto Area Contact Center Association. It's just really good to be able to be involved in those things, you know, because if you go to conferences, do webinars, read the articles, et cetera, it just gives you more knowledge. Yeah. And it's really easy in a contact center to be very insular and just be within your own business. But it's a profession, especially as you get to the more senior levels. It's an industry or profession. You got to reach out and you got to stay current. I'll mention magazines too, Contact Center Pipeline, you know, things like that as well that you can actually read. So it's just really good to have those resources because there are answers that are out there. And rather than reinventing the wheel, look at what the best is out there and help add it on. Because it's going to be a really tough role, you know, to be in a leadership role right now in a contact center with all the change.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's a great way to understand, like, what are other people doing that's successful? Yeah. What's new out there? What, you know, there are always people coming up with new ideas that can really help your organization. And if you're only focused on what you're doing internally, you're going to miss those. And so those organizations where you can network, you can talk to other professionals, they really are a great way for you to improve your business and, quite honestly, maybe make yourself look really good by bringing in an idea. So you should definitely reach out and network with those other professionals, because you just don't know what you might learn and how you might be able to improve your own business.
Exactly. That's just it, Rob.
Great advice. Well, Mike, thank you so much for joining Next in Queue today. I really appreciate it.
Well, you're welcome. And Rob, thank you for having me on. I appreciate this as well.
Next in Queue is brought to you by Happy To and is produced by me, Rob Dwyer. If you enjoy this podcast, please, by all means, subscribe and or rate this podcast in iTunes or your favorite podcast app. But more importantly, please tell just one person about this podcast. Word of mouth is the best way for people to discover new content. As always, thanks for listening.